You may have little to no interest in soccer. You may find soccer boring. That's absolutely okay. Today, I'm inviting us to explore how soccer unites much of the planet, sections of the world, with passion, sadness, and joy. Let's see how soccer might provide a few clues for finding new paths, moving forward for improving our world and relating better with the wider human family. We're 3 days away from celebrating our nation's birthday. Let's consider how soccer might help our country tackle our problems and build on our strengths. Soccer is simple. 22 people chase a ball around for 90 minutes and try and make it go in the other people's net. With World Cup soccer, the entire world is watching, almost, about half. In 2010, during the World Cup soccer in South Africa, about 3.2 billion people around the world watched at least a minute of a game that was roughly, at the time, 46% of the global population, with increased viewing options through the internet. For this year's World Cup in Russia, without a doubt, over half of the world will watch something. World Cup happens every 4 years, and all these little groups start about 2 years ahead of time trying to qualify, and fascinating stories always abound this year as well. This year, Egypt qualified for the first time in 28 years. I have two Egyptian friends here in Philly who have been glowing with pride and joy. But sadly for them, their star player, Mohamed Salah, got injured in the last big game of soccer before the World Cup, the Champions Cup. He got his shoulder dislocated, and Salah and his team played poorly and didn't win a game. But for Egypt, it was a big deal to be a part of. This year, Iceland, population of just under 350,000 people. I think Philly has 1.6 million in our city. Iceland has 350,000 people, became the smallest country by population ever to qualify for the tournament. In their first World Cup game ever, they shocked the world by tying Argentina 1-1. Argentina has one of the best players in the world, Leo Messi. I teared up watching those games of the Icelander fans in the stands. I just read their body language. They were in an existential moment of joy, even though they were losing. Didn't matter. They got there. The Colombian and Senegalese soccer teams are two of the teams that dance their hearts out after scoring goals. The dance is... It's a way of seeing dancing from all over the globe. Teams bring their dances from their local neighborhoods, every continent. And goal scoring has celebrations that mark players and eras going all the way back. A lot of us remember Bebeto of Brazil in the 90s. In 94, he played the cup where his wife had just had a baby. And every time, he scored a lot of goals that year, and he would... honor his baby with the baby. He dances with the baby. The World Cup is a big deal. A lot of people can identify with that kind of stuff around the globe, including countries that have never made the competition. Bangladeshis are famous for stopping everything they're doing to go watch a game in a home, in a store, in a restaurant. This happens even though their controlling government tries to disallow, make it illegal to put up the Argentinian or the Brazilian flag, which they do, because their team, they never have a chance. They're ranked 197 out of 207. But the Bangladeshis enjoy the cup. I enjoy the Cup. It's my favorite sporting event, without a doubt. The clincher for me was living in Mexico in 94. Ironically, that was the year the Cup was here in the States. But I lived in a small town, Comitán, Chiapas, in a house with no television, and I worked it out so that my job was really flexible. I was very proud of the efforts I made with my coworkers that for basically 4 weeks in a row, I stepped out twice a day to watch games, and I had a couple of my favorite joints where I would pull up a chair, order tacos and horchata, watch the game, and just talk. People were always watching together. You didn't have to know anybody. You'd just oogle, laugh, cry, tell stories. Fast forward 4 years ago, very, very fortunate. Our family, Kristen, Micah, Ellis, and I were on a vacation in Medellin, Colombia, during the World Cup. This is my Colombian jersey. And that year, Colombia advanced farther than they ever have. So our family, it is hard to explain the emotionality of this. We go out to plazas to watch the game. Massive numbers of people locked in to games. Every age bracket. I'm telling you, you could find a one-year-old, a two-year-old, a three-year-old, a four-year-old in these crowds, all the way up to 81, 82, 83, or 45. And you didn't have to watch the game. You could watch the people and know if something exciting, good was happening or sad and upsetting was happening. Everyone's like, I mean, people are not distracted around. They're in the same thing together. Unity. So I've been privileged to watch soccer in some pretty lovely, amazing situations, which not a lot of people have had. But what I know, including here in the States, in all different parts of the country, I've seen people watching from rags to riches, all different ages, caring deeply about a unifying event. And what I've said to the kids, if something around the globe unifies this many people, it deserves our attention. What's going on here? Because it could tell us about other ways of being. You don't have to care about soccer to think this is something that might show us something for how to appreciate life and make the world a better place. Soccer, first of all, is a great combination of athleticism, teamwork, passion, and creativity. It's a great art form. It could be like ballet. Baryshnikov. So the Brazilians call soccer the beautiful game. Jogo bonito. Jogo bonito. The Museum of Soccer in Sao Paulo, Brazil, says if soccer were a literary genre, it would be poetry. And you see the poetry. Touch passes. Watch Spain. They pass like 550 times a game. Boop, boop. It's poetry. Boop, boop. They just go over here, make a triangle. They go over here, make a triangle. Over the head bicycle kicks. Zigzags. Burst to the ball. Goalies flying through the air. Or one person versus another person alone for a PK, a penalty kick. That is like poetry drama right there. That is Greek drama. And humans need this. We need this. People go in places that are hot around the world, they go out in parks at 1 o'clock in the morning to play and participate in it themselves. We need poetry and beauty in order to live. Soccer feeds souls. So one of our jobs, we're not fundamentalists. We want to say, what feeds the soul of humanity? We hope our religion does that. Soccer is also a screen upon which we project our hopes, our desires, hatreds, and loves. Soccer is a place where people around the world hope that their most cherished values can be played out. And just like life, soccer has the good, the bad, and the ugly. And I could go on a lot about ugly in soccer, but the International Football Federation, FIFA, runs soccer around the world for years. This is very depressing if you look at the history. For years, media and law enforcement around the world have documented FIFA corruption. This is representative. During the World Cup in South Africa, the New York Times reported referees were busted multiple times with major payoffs. Referees were videotaped in South Africa the day before a game in the town of the game they were reffing, going into a bank and walking out with bags with tens of thousands of dollars of cash. And anybody who follows soccer is not surprised. It's sad. And it could be high-level officials of every region of the globe have been busted and jailed on and off for years. And violence and bullying are too prevalent. It's reducing every year, thank goodness. But the top easiest example is a small but fierce subgroup of English soccer fans known as hooligans are infamous for physically fighting opposing fans. And tensions, you cannot make this stuff up. This year, the tensions are very much increased in watching the World Cup in Russia because Putin literally made a new police force, which he put up on these huge horses with bull whips, which they have used and said they will use to control crowds. So if Putin's police go against the hooligans, it could literally be described technically as a massacre, but hopefully it will not happen. But the international community, this is where it's an example. Just like we need to do at home, we need to rise up and do better. So we need to say that stuff can't be happening in sports. That's unacceptable. And here's a good example. This one breaks my heart. I love the Mexican team. Sadly, who loves them? Who's rooting for the Mexican squad with what's going down at the border? Okay, I'm rooting for Mexico. I won't tell about my fantasies with Mexico team winning and Trump, but grab me after service. But sadly, the Mexican fans got in a really bad habit over last year's cheering homophobic slurs. The international community raised up and said, no, cannot happen. FIFA clamped down. There was a fine in the first game of this cup against the Mexican team, and it has stopped so far. So hopefully, like, we all need to do better. No. No homophobic slurs during soccer games, people. It's 2018. See, hope and justice, just like for humanity, are intrinsic to soccer because they're a part of humanity. In 2010, when the World Cup was in South Africa, they brought this famous 18-karat solid gold World Cup trophy to South Africa. The first stop was to Nelson Mandela for him to touch and bless the cup. The cup was brought directly to Mandela, spiritual leader, spent over 25 years in an apartheid jail, then came out, forgave, served as the first black president. Imagine the power for people around the world who care about freedom and democracy. And during that tournament, Bishop Tutu, who had his own great dance during goals, you got to look it up on the internet, Tutu dancing to goals. He's got some good moves. Bishop Desmond Tutu said that for South Africa serving as the host, South Africa experienced an extraordinary revival of its national spirit and self-esteem. That is a big deal. There's other ways to get there. We're not fun, but that's a big deal. We can appreciate that. The story of hope and justice being intrinsic values to soccer goes back a long way. In the 1800s, a young lawyer working in South Africa, Mohandas Gandhi, was among a first group of Indian men who helped establish the first organized football group on the continent that was not run by whites. Of course, that's really important because Western cultures had crashed in and oppressed African peoples in horrific ways, but hope and justice are intrinsic to the human family and soccer. Catch this. In recent years, the Ghanaian team has received much love. And what a history they have. Kwame Nkrumah, the first leader of the independent Ghana, nicknamed the Ghanaian national soccer team the Black Stars. Black Stars. In memory of the ship used by Marcus Garvey, Jamaican hero, in the 1920s, who transported people of African ancestry to Africa, back from the places that their ancestors had been enslaved to. So I'm saying Nkrumah, Gandhi, Mandela, Johnson, Johnson. They care about hope and justice, just like. Hope can be found in so many places in soccer that we might highlight in our lives. Some of the languages players on the field are speaking in this year's cup: Wolof, Farsi, French, Spanish, Portuguese, Arabic, Japanese, English, Polish, Swedish, Igbo, Yoruba. There are plenty of games where people interacting have zero capacity to understand the other verbal language of the people they're on the field with. Yet they find a way, to compete, communicate, work it out. Sounds like a lesson America might benefit from. Sounds like a benefit the church might, sounds like a lesson the church might benefit from. With relatives, neighbors, friends, coworkers, strangers who speak different languages, we can collaborate, cooperate, and have fun. This is also true with people we have differences of opinion with. Don't stop because someone else is speaking another language than I am. I got to keep going, keep interacting, find a way with heart and spirit. I might not understand anything you're saying about gun control or GLBT. It makes no sense to me, but I can't give up on you. In the depths of our bones, we crave safe and respectful ways of unifying our country. These examples of communication and collaboration can help this beloved country, which too often stands apart and against the sisterhood of nations. President Trump, even though he stopped the family detention separation policy going forward, still has thousands of people separated in detention camps, including kids. And we, just like we said no to apartheid, we're saying no to this. It is not day in and day out, people are protesting. Many of us were downtown yesterday. Mara Dowdle got arrested with 600 women in D.C. this week. We're going to keep getting arrested. Sarah Fraser is going down to the border to support. No way are we going to give up on issues that matter in this country. We'll keep talking. We don't have to speak, but we're not going to give up on some core of it. Iceland made it to the cup. People said they couldn't make it. We're not giving up. The cup, this trophy, was brought to President Mandela to bless. Who would have ever predicted that in 1968? We're not giving up. You think we're going to give up? No. On our country's birthday, let's recognize and celebrate that as patriots, we can serve by helping our nation step more fully into a sisterhood and brotherhood of nations. In the words of Black Elk, let us honor the truth. There is a sacred hoop of our people, which is one of many hoops that make one circle that's the whole hoop of the world. In the center grows one mighty tree to shelter all the children. Blessings be. Amen.